Hey, see that south block right there? That used to be a sugar beet factory. It was owned by a couple in our church. They started a mission. This couple. It was right there. Every time I see that, I think of Virginia and Kenny. The Kennys owned a sugar beet factory. They came from McMinnville, and they planted themselves right there, and they had this sugar beet factory, and Mrs. Kenny, she had this deep passion for our city. She loved our city. In particular, she loved the Chinese migrant workers that built the railroad up and down the entire valley. And so Mrs. Kenny and Mrs. Baker, who happens to be the pastor's wife, they started this Bible study. It was actually an English class. They used the Bible. And they taught somewhere in the vicinity of 40 migrant Chinese every week. Why? Because they love the city. And they love people. That was back in the 1870s. They sent missionaries. Some of those Chinese workers, they got saved. They got baptized. They became trained. They became disciples of Christ. One was sent to mainland China. One was sent to the state of Washington. And two were sent to Washington, D.C. I wish the Washington, D.C. folks would have had a little bit more impact. But it's so cool. So every time you see that South Block, you realize that in many ways, the heart of this church and the passion of this church to be a church for the city was laid in the fabric and the DNA by people who lived over the city, who started a business and had a passion. We have picked that up. We want to be a church for the city that reaches the world for Christ. There's a couple of thoughts that come to my mind if you were going to do that. Number one is we have to feel sent here. The Kennys were sent here. They were sent by the church, the Baptist church in McMinnville, and they sent them here. They not only moved here, they moved their entire business here. You got to believe you're sent. Because if you're not sent, all you're doing is living in that place. And if all you do is live in that place, then you don't pick up the second part of being a church for the city. Not only are you sent there, but you have a message. And you have a message that has been given to you. It's not a message we've created. It's not a message we've dreamed up. It's a message that was given to us. And that message is for people who periodically, or maybe every week, have bad weeks and wonder, is there any hope? I'm a news junkie. I like news. So maybe a little beyond that. I love news. And one of the terms that's new, it's not new in the sense of in the last year or two. It's been around for a long time, but it's called breaking news. I actually think they should relabel it and call brace yourself. And it seems to me that breaking news is always trying to be more sensational than what they shared at the beginning. And each session or each day, it's like this breaking news is trying to kind of one-up what was before. And it's always, in a sense, breaking news is catastrophic. It's always sensationalized. But sometimes we have weeks like that. Have you ever had a week like that? Where you spill your coffee on the way to work? And then find out that the dog that you put out in the morning, you didn't put it out early enough when you came home. And the dog's gift to you has been incubating all day in your house. And you come into the house and you're like, whoa. And then you find out as you're having a Zoom meeting that night on the internet, and it's a really important one for work, that your internet goes down, and you just think, what else can happen on this day? And that's only Tuesday. Sometimes people have those kind of weeks. They have the kind of weeks like one of our precious gals who was going to have surgery and her heart was a little too excited at 200 and 220 and she doesn't get to have it. And all of a sudden, you know, what we plan doesn't happen. We have those kind of weeks. We have those kind of weeks where we're coming to church on a Sunday morning and we get in an accident. We're like, Lord, let me just get to church. That's all I want to do. And then you sit at home, like our friend is, wondering, it's like, God, what's wrong? And those things happen. And when those things happen, God says to this church, I have a message that I want you to share with people. It's not a message we dream up. It's not a message we create. It's a message God gives to us. And in the midst of all of the breaking news every day, God says there's three anchors that I want you to share. And so I want to give us a message. And that message is for a church for the city that says, we love you, but we were sent here to give you a message. We're not lecturing you. We're here to give you hope. We're here to give you hope when you have a bad week. We're here to give you hope when you get in an accident. We're here to give you hope when you find out your heart doesn't work. We're here to give you hope. And what is it? It's in this text, Psalm 46. And it's a text really in many ways given to us to give to others. It's given to us to give to others. It was a song to be sung. We're not going to sing it this morning. I'm going to preach it. But it's one that you can share. It's one that you can sing to people. And it's got three stanzas, just like any good song. And the first stanza is, when chaos comes your way, reach out your hand because God's hand is always going to be there. When chaos comes your way, and it presumes that it will come, we are going to get accidents. We are going to have heart failure. We are going to have those things. God doesn't say to the church, hey, tell you what, I'm going to take all of those away from you. Man, if God took everything away from people in church, the church would be flooded. Why? Because people are like, hey, I don't want to have heart issues. I don't want to have cancer, so I got to go to church. The reality is God allows Christians to have cancer. He allows Christians to get in accidents. He allows Christians to have spilled coffee. And when that happens, we discover that we have a message. What is it? When chaos comes your way, reach out your hand because God's hand is always, always going to be there. God is our refuge, a strength, an ever-present help in trouble. What kind of trouble? Oh, it's pretty catastrophic. Look at it. Therefore, we will not fear though the earth give way. That's called an earthquake. The mountains fall into the heart of the sea. That's catastrophic. And though its waters roar and foam and the mountains quake with their surging. If that happens, it's a national disaster. Check with Texas. They had a river that was rising 1 foot every minute at a particular time. I can't fathom the panic that would come when you're literally just watching this river move to the top of your house and just begin to continue to rise. And you're trying to figure out not only how to get out of there, but even where to go. When catastrophic events come your way, what does the psalmist say? Reach out your hand because God says, I'm your refuge and I am your ever-present help in time of need. God says, I'm with you. I'm your refuge. I'm not the one who eliminates all the waters rising. In fact, he presumes that it's periodically going to happen. It's catastrophic. You and I are going to face, our city is going to face, our nation is going to face seasons where it's just catastrophic. And you're just thinking, I don't know, God, if we can survive. I don't know if I can take another breath. I don't know if I can take another hit. I don't know if I can take another set of bad news. And we want to turn off the breaking news because we're just tired of hearing all of the calamity. And it's in that moment, God says, I'm not going to remove you. I'm going to be a refuge. I'm going to come over you. And I want you to reach out your hand because I'm going to be present. When the total collapse comes in a person's life, that's not the time where we say, it's okay, it doesn't hurt. Yes, it does. It hurts bad. Some of the things people face in our congregation, it hurts deeply. We're not trying to remove the pain. We're just simply saying, reach out your hand. Why? Because God says, I promise you, I will be a refuge. When I was a little kid, I grew up here in the valley, down in Corvallis. I didn't like thunderstorms. I didn't like lightning storms. They scared me a lot. I love them now. I mean, to be honest with you, I that's one of the things I miss of Colorado is that we had a lot of thunderstorms, and man, I love those things. And those, you know, cloud to ground strikes, average thunderstorm in Colorado had 1,500 cloud to ground strikes. I loved those things. I didn't want the fires, but there's nothing like a 4th of July sent by God. Those things are beautiful. But when I was a kid, let me tell you what, thunder and lightning scared me to death. I would run into my bedroom, put my head under the pillow, turn music up so loud that I could feel it in my chest. And the only thing that would ever pacify me is if my mom came in and she grabbed my hand and she said, it's going to be okay. Now, I have no idea why at the age of whatever I was, 5, 6, that I felt like my mom was stronger than that lightning, but I did. There was something about my mom's presence that allowed me to take my head out from underneath my pillow. There was something about her presence, and it didn't make sense. My mom wasn't more powerful than the lightning storm, but in my mind, she was. And there's a sense of which that's what God is saying, but here's the difference between God and my mother. God is more powerful than the lightning storm. He is more powerful than what we face. He is stronger than anything you're going to hear this week. He is more able. He is stable. He is not threatened. And breaking news is not news to him. And it's not a threat to him. And the message that God gives to us is that when people in our lives or when we experience chaos, don't promise that God's going to take the chaos away, because seldom he does. But what he will do is he will stabilize their heart, and they will discover a peace that Philippians 4:7 says surpasses all understanding. In other words, the peace doesn't fit the context. Why? Reach out your hand, because God's hand is there. The second thing he says, in the midst of a drought, there are hidden resources that God always has for us. Look for them. There's a river, he says, verse 4, whose streams make glad the city of God. What is the city of God? It's Jerusalem. There's a river whose streams make glad the city of God, the holy place where the Most High dwells. Here's the funny thing. Jerusalem doesn't have a river. There's no visible river in Jerusalem. So it's almost like either you got your geography wrong, God, or God was saying something that's really pretty unique. In a place where you see no river, God has streams. In a place where you see no resources, God has resources. In a situation where you think God's not present, he's actually there. You just don't see him always. There are streams. If you go to Jerusalem today, there's no visible river. There never has been. And so the writer is telling us something, even by his very statement. Go back and look at this. There is a river whose streams make glad the city of God. What river? There was a hidden river. The tunnel of Hezekiah. And it flowed beneath the ground, outside of the purview of people, unaware to people walking by, not seen. And if there's anything that could be of great hope to people, is in the midst of your drought, when you think you don't see God, he's there. And in the midst of your challenge, when you can't see the direct fingerprints of God, it would be nothing for us to say, hey, look at this river over here. That's like the resources of God. And that would make sense. There's only 17 million gallons that go by here every minute. That would be like, oh, that's the bounty of God. But you see, when calamity comes, when accidents come, when bad news from the doctor comes, it's then that sometimes we feel like, God, we don't see you. God, we don't feel your presence. I don't feel you slipping your hand into my hand. And he said, there is a stream that makes the city glad. There is a resource of God. There is the hidden resources of God that are available even though you don't see them. Look for them. Trust them. They're there. Maybe if he was writing a current poem or a current psalm today, it would be like, there's a Wi-Fi out there. You don't see it. But by it, you can connect to the world. Just before the service started, our team in Africa FaceTimed me. I was going around trying to show some folks. I don't know about you, but that still trips me out, to be quite honest with you. That they're in northern Mozambique, and they're over there having a worship time, and we can have a conversation, and I can see their faces, and I can hear them. I understand we put people on the moon, and we do all kinds of things. We open up people's heart and do heart surgery. We replace their hearts. We do a lot of things today, but that still excites me, that I can have a conversation with our church in Mozambique. Can't see it. I can't see all the signals that are being transferred all over the world, but God says they're there. They're real. And I think that might be a current day illustration of what he's saying. There's a river. There's a resource. You don't see it. Can't put your fingers on it. But God is there. And in the midst of whatever drought you may feel like you're in right now, or whatever in your family, or whatever in this city that you run into it, you have the confidence to be able to say, as surely is, there are signals in the world that can connect us to the world. There is a river, a stream, a resource of God, and he is here. He's not abandoned us. He's not left us. As surely as God is real, his resources are too. Trust him. When you face chaos, reach out your hand because God is present. And when you face a drought, when you feel like God has abandoned you, trust. There are resources. There's a river running underneath you. And God is as present and his resources are as available to you as ever, even though you don't see them. Third, what is the message he gives us? When the future feels really uncertain, release the passion to control everything and trust him. Verse 8. Come, see the works of God. Desolations he has brought on the earth. He makes wars cease to the ends of the earth. I want you to be still. I want you to discover that God is really in control. He will be exalted among the nations, and I will be exalted in the earth. Being still does not mean be silent. It's not what the term means. Being still is not being contemplative. It's not being quiet. The term literally means is to let go, to open your palm, be still. Why? Because in chaotic situations, what's our natural tendency? I want to get control. When our teenager is out of control, I want to get in control. When there is financial issues that are facing our family, I want to get in control. When there are medical issues that are beyond my capability, I want to understand them. I want to get in control. It's the natural passion of your heart and my heart. In the midst of chaos, we want to work in verse of that. We want to be in control. We want to be the one driving the ship. We want to be the one that's in control. And God says, when you get in that situation, resist the natural temptation to want to put your arms around something and manage it. Be still. Let go. Let God run this thing. I'm not a big thrill seeker. I'm never going to jump out of plane. The only way I'm ever going to get out of a plane, if it's in the middle of the air, is if somebody puts a gun to my head and shoves me. I'm not a thrill seeker. I just found out about somebody in our church who just jumped out of an airplane, and I thought, man, tell you what, I thought you were smarter than that. I'm not in. If I go backwards, I get seasick. If I get on a boat, I get seasick. If I'm in the bathtub, I can get seasick. I'm not a thrill seeker. I do like a good roller coaster once in a while. And if you ever see somebody on a roller coaster and ever look at them trying to steer that roller coaster, you want to go up to them and say, you don't steer a roller coaster. You just have fun on the ride. If you ever see somebody up there trying to muscle this thing and steer it because they don't like where it's going, you want to come and say, I have a clue. You know, you can't do that. This is a roller coaster. There's a sense in which a roller coaster is a good picture of life. The Bible says a man plans his course, but God determines his steps. Let me translate that into English. God sets the course of the roller coaster. You go along for the ride. And you can fight him, and you can try and steer him, and you can try and eliminate the loop-de-loops, and you can do all of that. But the reality is, if you're on that roller coaster, if you're alive, then ultimately you have to come to grips with the fact that God is God. Be still. Let go. Doesn't mean you're silent. It doesn't mean you're unengaged. It means that you and I are ultimately not in control. God is. You don't have ultimate control over your kids. God's going to go with them when they go off to college. God's going to be with them when they get married. God's going to take care of them when they leave your house and go to kindergarten. And God says in the natural temptation of life, when things get unsteady, when we're going through the loop-de-loop, resist the temptation to grab a hold, take control, and try to make life surrender to you. Resist it. Because like trying to steer a roller coaster, you're simply going to wear your arms out trying to direct something that has rails already laid out. That's a message, my friends, that you and I have been given. And in our chaotic culture, I cannot think of a more relevant and more important message that we have to share with people. When we watch people try and fight, when we see people trying to take control of things, when we see families that are kind of out of control and they're trying to get their arms around it, and you see your good friend who's trying to manage her husband and her kids, and she's exhausted, and you just want to go to her and say, hey, can I just tell you, you're on a roller coaster. And you're not going to steer this thing. God's in control. And my message is to you, relax. God set the course. You still get to be engaged, but the sovereign purposes of God have been established for our life, for our church's life. Don't miss the fact that the average church in the United States exists for 38 years. That's the duration of the average church in America. We're at 166, and that's not because this church has had phenomenal pastors. It's because God sovereignly has said, I want you to have a message for this city. We exist because God has given us life and continues to do that. And the sooner that all of us come to grips with that, the more peace we're going to experience and the more joy we're going to experience. Because in the midst of chaos, God says, reach out your hand. I'm there. And when drought comes our way, look for the hidden resources of God. He has a river that flows beneath you. Though you may not see it, God is present. And in the midst of chaotic situations, resist the temptation to start taking control of everything in your life, because you're going to be fighting against God. And when you do that, you're not going to like the results. There was a hiker in Colorado. He took off, and the one smart thing he did, Colorado's right there on the Continental Divide, and so what can happen is you can get storms that'll come in that you don't even see it, and all of a sudden they roll in, and man, you're just buried in snow. And this hiker, he came, and he took off, went for a hike, and he let the park ranger know where he was headed, and he headed out. What they didn't realize is there was a storm that came in, and it started dumping snow like you can't imagine. It was just growing right below you. And this hiker's out there. He's probably 4 or 5 miles in, and all of a sudden, the trail that was really clear is now disappeared. He's finding himself moving in circles as the story is told, and he gets no headway. He actually is just kind of staying put, and the snow's coming down, and it's starting to get dusk, and the light is starting to leave, and he realizes, I am going to spend the night out here, and I'm not prepared. The smart thing he did is he stopped by the park ranger station on the way up the hill, and he told him where he was going. This young man is out there, ready to hike, not ready to build an igloo. He's ready to hike. He's not ready to spend the night in a foot of snow. The snow's coming down. He can barely see anything in front of him. And all of a sudden, he feels this hand come on his shoulder. Half scared, but more relieved, he turns, and there standing behind them is one of the bravest and kindest park rangers you could ever imagine. It's snowing so heavily that the park ranger said to the young man, "Take my hand. I don't think you'll see me if you even walk behind me. Take my hand, and I'll lead you out of here." That kid got out of there. He was 20 years of age, and he probably would have died that night had not that park ranger taken his hand and walked him out of there. No matter what chaos you feel, God's promise is, I'm your refuge. I'm your ever-present in time of need. Trust me, reach out your hand. I'll be there. Sarah, she was 35 when she got the news that she never wanted to hear, ever. She was 35, 2 kids, married, and her husband said, "I'm out of here." He left. Nights were the hardest for her. Nights, she said, seemed to last forever. It was nights that the empty pantry seemed to be emptier. And one night when Sarah was lying in bed, she had a conversation that came back to her mind. It was a conversation she had with her grandmother. And the conversation said something about, God is my refuge. Not knowing her Bible very well, she typed it in Google, "God is my refuge." And if you do that, it will immediately bring up Psalm 46. She got out of bed, her 2 kids sleeping, and she went. She looked for a Bible, didn't find it. She got her phone, she found a Bible. She started reading Psalm 46. It's the one we were in. God is my refuge. He's my strength. He's a present help in trouble. She began to pray it. She wasn't a church-going gal. She had a grandmother that prayed. And if you got a grandmother that prays, You're in a good place. She went back and she began to just pray this. God, you're my refuge and you're my strength. You're present and you're here to help me and I'm in trouble. She laid her head down that night and she would later tell me, nothing changed in her life. No money got it put into her bank account. Her husband didn't come home. Her kids didn't automatically become beautiful and obedient. But she said somehow that verse became my mooring, my anchor. And whenever I felt anxious, she said, I'd go back and read that and I'd pray it. It's exactly what God wanted to happen to Sarah and to you and to our city. When you face chaos, reach out your hand because God is present. When you're in that place where it's a drought and you feel like God's not hearing your prayers and you're alone, really alone, like you're at home, your husband left, you have no money and you got two kids who are looking to you for everything. There's a city whose river flows and makes the city and the family glad. And he invites you, I want you to be still. Not quiet. He's not telling you to close your mouth. He's telling you to reach and release your hands. And he's saying that if you trust me, I will exalt myself in your life. In 1878, these two ladies met in the office of the factory. And they said to themselves, God, you're not going to send us to be missionaries in China, but you have sent China to us. Would you help us to love them? And they started a mission. A few years later, there was a gentleman in our church that felt a passion to reach the homeless. And they started the mission. For 166 years, God has sent us as a church to this city. But he has sent us not just to live here. He has sent us to give us a message. And the message is very simple. When you hit chaos in your life, reach out your hand. God's going to be there. And when you come to the end of your resources, there's a river that flows. It's the life of Christ that will save you, it will transform you, and it will empower you. And when you walk with him, you'll discover that a man can plan the course of his life, but God determines his steps. And the best way to enjoy a roller coaster is to put your hands up in the air, shout real loud, and say to God, this is your trip. I'm with you. And the best way for you and I to enjoy this life is to raise our hands and to say, God, we are your church. This is your city. Would you send us to love this city for the glory of Christ? That's what it means to be a church for the city. Let's pray.